Welcome back to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. Don't forget that after the show, we always upload the MP3s to our website, which is www.nagb.org.bs. If you go to the Learn menu and scroll down to Blank Canvas, you can find all the archived shows, so you can listen to them again or listen to ones you missed or whatever. And I think this one's quite interesting. Maybe people are trying to scratch their heads about how this is art, but we will talk about that. So I'm in the studio tonight with Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, Associate Professor of English at University of the Bahamas, and Michael Edwards, Assistant Professor of Visual Arts at the University of the Bahamas. And we're talking about the exhibition coming up at the National Art Gallery, which will open next Thursday, the 23rd. It is one of our Double Dutch series where we ask Bahamians to collaborate with regional practitioners and create an exhibition. And this is called Hot Water. And it's part of the kind of experts, one of the projects leading toward the Bahamian involvement in Expo 2020 in Dubai. But you're working with a group of artists called Plastico Fantastico. And you're doing a lot of, before the break, we were talking about kind of the research you're doing. So I think we're going to speak about your trip to Ragged Island and sort of how these ideas of sustainability and connectivity are so important. But how's that art?
Well, art is in everything we do.
Yeah, no, I know that. I'm just saying, like, for someone who's like, how is this an exhibition at the National Art Gallery? They're researching hot ocean rising. So can you speak a little bit about maybe a sort of social art practice and sort of what that means?
Yeah, I mean, climate change, these are pretty hot topics. hot water. So it's about a creative practice. Mm-hmm. And creative practice is not limited to the arts, right? And so you can have a lot of people coming into the space who are creative in their areas, disciplines, domains. And it's really about kind of having a collaboration, a conversation, mm-hmm. cross-disciplinary conversations. And so that in and of itself, for us, is creative. And so having a kind of social-minded individual who is not limited to landscape painting or kind of traditional practice.
Or even abstract painting or portrait painting or photography. The definitions
that we've come to associate of what art is or what art should be. We wish to dispel a lot of those myths, and, you know, within even within art departments in academia. And so,
well, I think there's a lot of contemporary practices that aren't even 21st century. I mean, you think about going back to 20th century with artists like Joseph Beuys, of social sculpture, which is this idea of art as creating movement within society as being like an artistic practice, right? Of getting people to behave a certain way, or of bringing people together to create a happening or an event or a performance, but something that actually stays in the community, that like leaves a footprint in the community that might change people's thinking, and that in itself is like an artistic practice.
And Joseph Beuys is one of the famous ones, right? Yeah. In terms of him being socially minded and kind of challenging the discipline or particular domain of contemporary art practice. So there are others, as you had mentioned, happenings or whatever it may be, experiences.
And then you have the art of architecture, because architecture is art.
Absolutely.
It's how you put up buildings that work with their space and breathe or create the kind of... It's this relationship with the environment. I think, who's it, Frank Lloyd Wright and all of these people?
Falling Waters,
exactly. That build incredible buildings. It's not about a block.
Right. It's not a block you take from anywhere and plonk down. It's a structure that has to react to the environment. Yeah.
It's about its context and it's about site.
Yeah.
And some of the best architects pay attention to site.
And I think one of the problems we've actually had in the Bahamas, again, I'm not an urban planner or whatever, so I have no idea, but I feel like, working at the NAGB, which is this historic structure, and we've been through several pretty intense hurricanes now, and the building itself really manages very well. Mm-hmm. And part of that is, yes, it was restructured with steel inside, but I think even before that, it really stayed in pretty good shape for 100 years, because it was built specifically with our environment in mind. Mm-hmm. And the wind is caught in the veranda, it's kind of sucked in and spewed out the other end, like it's allowed to go through, and the structure somehow leans in and out of the wind, right? It actually, because it's wooden, a lot of it. But then we've started building these very solid structures that have no give and have nowhere for the air to go. And so they just get kind of knocked over because they're just a solid block that's there. They're not allowing the wind to do anything but knock them over.
Right. I remember
coming
back to that point, it's like when you have a house and the hurricane comes through, you have to open the window on one side and close the window on the other side because that's how you create the balance that allows the building to stay to stay there. Because
I actually heard of a friend's building on Cat Island that they locked it up too tight.
Yes.
And it was you know, they were away, but they knew it was coming, so they locked everything up super tight. And so the roof just blew off because the pressure built up inside. The pressure drop outside affected the pressure inside and the ceiling just blew off. And I remember our first hurricane, we couldn't close all our windows because they were like all old and ready. And my husband was like, oh my God. And I said, no, sweetie, it's fine. Because if you little, you got to be actually let some air in and some air out because the building sort of has to breathe.
Yeah. Otherwise, you have that effect and it just explodes or implodes or something happens and you find that some of the more modern homes had that problem. Mm-hmm. Like one of the rooms blew out because there was just too much pressure in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think about that because we've become so far removed from our ancestors who actually understood how you deal with the lees and the poles of the wind.
Yeah. So what did you find in Ragged Island? So part of this show, I mean really a large part of this show, and we'll find out what the artists, the group of artists, Plastico Fantastico, that you're working with, what they'll come up with in terms of object making or whatever. But for your purposes, in terms of the Expo 2020, part of the research was to go down to an island that has been ravaged by a hurricane. So can you tell us a little bit about that trip and why Ragged Island? I mean, for me, it's obvious why Ragged Island, but why Ragged Island? What did you find there? What was the sort of...
Great question. Yeah. We get that all the time. Why Ragged Island?
Yeah.
And the response is, why not Ragged Island?
Yeah, sure.
It's pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
We can wrap our arms around it, and it gives us the opportunity to kind of come up with a model to show what can be, what we can do, both in the built and non-built environment. So what did we gather? We gathered lots of stories, right? We spoke with a lot of people, and that's ongoing, kind of gathering information from residents and descendants of Ragged Island. And you can glean a lot of information from stories. Mm-hmm. And a lot of those stories were historical.
Kind and of storytelling speaking. Is also an art form, right?
It's an art form. We're going to get back to the art form. We're going to talk a lot about art right at the end. But gathering stories gave us a glimpse of historical trade patterns between Ragged Island, Cuba, and Haiti, and what that was like in the 40s and 50s, and how New Providence was kind of way north and very distant, and people went south, and that was a kind of triangle. So people spoke a lot about that. And so that was interesting for us and, of course, for the students to kind of get this kind of rich information. Going down to Ragged Island, by the way, it took us 3 days to get there, right? So the journey to get there was kind of the research in and of itself. So we stopped in to about 7 or 8 keys overnight, and a couple of them, Staniel Key and a couple of others. But it took us 3 days to get there. We were on the ground for about 6 hours, and then we turned around
and
from Ragged back to New Providence, straight shoot. I think it took about 36 hours directly. But
And that was not a choice to take 3 days to get there. That was just
that's the way it
the
is.
Only way you could get there.
That was so we took the Captain C. Shout out to the Captain C and the crew. It was an amazing trip, amazing crew, amazing captain, Eddie and Maycock. So the mail boat would stop. Service a lot of the private keys in the Exumas, and that's how they make their money, and that was amazing to see, especially the juxtaposition between the Exumas and the rest of the southern Bahamas, just in terms of infrastructure.
Or even within the Exumas, because you have keys like Hyben, Staniel, Black Point is just a totally different experience.
Absolutely.
So Hyben Key and Staniel Key, I would imagine, are quite developed.
Quite developed, luxurious.
Belle
Island. Blue Island.
So amazing spaces. But if you want to talk a bit about that.
And then you go to Black Point, and it's incredible. It's rich it's just such a different, it's like being in a parallel universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go to Farmer's Key, and it's also like it's far less developed than Black Point, but this is the Bahamas that we've grown up with. This is the Bahamas of our ancestors. And we seem to be depleting that Bahamas to enrich a different Bahamas.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see them as being mutually exclusive. I think that the two should be able to coexist.
Right. And so
but not one with an advantage over the other,
right.
I suppose. Yeah.
Absolutely. And so as we talk about the built environment, there's the non-built environment, right? So there's kind of cultural resiliency and these sorts of aspects. And that was very important for the students mm-hmm. to kind of note and take note of, right? So you're looking, but you're still not seeing what's there.
And how old are these students, these UB students? These just to give the listeners kind of an
19,
idea of like...
20, yeah. 25.
And have mostly grown up in New Providence, so have not had contact with city kids, basically.
Right. And so that was the journey. And then on Ragged Island, kind of, again, interviewing folk.
Yeah.
Sitting down, speaking with them, kind of having, you know, as researchers and designers, a big part of what we do is empathy,
mm-hmm.
right? Listening to what they have to say, looking at the world through their eyes. On the ground, in terms of the built environment, I think everyone was in awe or shock, just in disbelief that it appeared as if the hurricane had just passed through last week, mm-hmm. last month, right?
Mm-hmm.
In terms of the infrastructure. And so that was eye-opening.
Yeah. And, you know, there are certain things we don't talk about. We don't talk about trauma. We don't talk about post-traumatic stress. We don't talk about the lasting or the legacy mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. traumatic experiences that go on for generations because nothing has happened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have environmental trauma and you also have personal trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And the environment goes through an incredible amount of trauma each time there's a storm. But it does give it a chance to renovate itself. It takes time, though.
Mm-hmm.
So when we went there, we saw that pretty much nothing had changed.
Correct.
I mean, there were some people who were working on building, but because there was no water or a very limited amount of fresh water, they couldn't do a whole lot because in order to build or rebuild, you need fresh water
because
mm-hmm. you can't use the salt water because the buildings will crack.
Mm-hmm.
And we should say that a big part of our trip, the Restoration Ragged Island Association
yes.
facilitated
yeah.
A lot of what we did or what we were able to do in terms of, one, getting there, two, on the ground, speaking with people. And so they were a big part of a part of that. And so...
And they have a plan that they would like to see happen with their community.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like bringing everybody together to sit around the same table and have equity in voices.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about having a partnership that doesn't respect the people who are actually on the ground going through the experience, but come in and say, oh, this is how we see it. You know, it's listening to what they're
actually
saying.
Well, and also there must be a massive knowledge base there.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. You know, even if it's not, you know, a university-educated knowledge, right? There's people living on the island with a real knowledge
of
how to build in that environment, how to do things in that environment sustainably. And maybe sometimes those voices aren't heard because mm-hmm. they are someone who's always lived wherever they've lived for their whole life. And, and so
correct.
This is kind of giving them a platform in a way. Or
right.
Yeah.
That's really wonderful. So we are talking with Dr. Ian Bethel Bennett, who is an associate professor in English at University of the Bahamas, and Michael Edwards, an assistant professor of visual arts at University of the Bahamas. And we are speaking really about the project leading up to an exhibition at the National Art Gallery, but this project is only part of a series of projects building up towards Expo 2020, where the Bahamas will have a pavilion at this World Fair in Dubai in obviously 2020. So we're going to come back after the break and speak more about the research that's been leading up to that, about this trip to Ragged Island, the project that's you're going to see in the National Art Gallery, and you'll hear more from them both after the break. You're listening to The Blank Canvas, the show in which we speak about visual culture and creative community. I'm Amanda Coulson, the director of the National Art Gallery, and you're listening to 96.9 Guardian Talk Radio. We're going to be right back after this break.